Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. The news keeps coming hard and fast. This week, Helsinki. Before that, immigration. Kids ripped away from their families. In the mix, a new Supreme Court nominee, trade wars, and no shortage of political debate and passion. With just 4 months to go to the midterm elections, the race to control Congress is on, and Americans are fired up to vote. So what issue will bring them to the polls? What should the candidates be talking about? This hour on Point, campaign strategies for Democrats and Republicans. You can join us on air or online. What's driving you to vote this fall? Is it to check Trump's agenda or to propel it forward? The economy, immigration. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from two veteran campaign strategists from both parties. But joining me first from Washington is Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report. You can find a link to his recent article, Why House Control is Getting the Headlines, at our website, onpointradio.org. Charlie, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Hello, Anthony. Thanks for having me
on. Yeah. I want to talk first about the numbers in the House and Senate and what's at stake in the midterm elections. First, the House. Democrats need to flip 24 Republican seats to regain control. The party in power.
Actually, it's 23.
23. Yeah. Thanks for that correction.
24 were before Pennsylvania.
Got it. Right.
Special election.
That made a change. So the party in power traditionally loses seats in Congress. From where we sit today, how does it look to you right now?
Our look, and some of my knowledge is derivative. Our terrific House editor David Wasserman is sort of the pro's pro. But we're seeing Democrats need 23 seats. We're seeing Democrats on a trajectory to pick up between 20 and 35 seats. So obviously, if it's 20 or 21 or 22, then Republicans hold on by their fingernails. But in all probability, it's going to go to 23 or north of that, and. I've been saying maybe a 65% chance of Democrats winning a majority, but frankly, I think that's kind of low now, and I'm kind of closer probably to 70% or so. Something would have to change the trajectory of this election for Republicans, I think, to hold on to their House majority. Emphasize House, not Senate.
Right. We'll talk about the Senate in a minute. I'm seeing polls that suggest Democrats are fired up in a big way, but there's also evidence that Republicans, at least the base Republicans, are fired up as well and highly supportive of the president. Do you have a sense of which side has the enthusiasm edge, I guess?
Well, I make a distinction between highly supportive of the president and fired up. I don't see much evidence at all that Republican voters are fired up, are enthusiastic at all. But they are almost monolithically supportive of President Trump. But, just the two things I would cite in the most recent NBC Wall Street Journal poll, they asked people on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of interest in the election, with 9 or 10, with 10 being extremely interested. 63% of Democrats describe themselves as 9s or 10s. Only 47% of Republicans are 9s or 10s. In the Fox News poll, they ask about, are you more or less enthusiastic about voting this year? 51% of Democrats are more enthusiastic than normal, only 43% of Republicans. And, you had a comparable gap among liberals and conservatives. So, and the thing is, I think the reason why we have such a strong pattern of midterm election losses for whichever party is in the White House is that to borrow a phrase that my mother used to use, not in a political context, but you have a third fewer people vote in midterm elections than presidential years, and the people that are more motivated and do disproportionately vote are people with their, to use my mom's phrase, noses out of joint. Mm-hmm. People that are angry or fearful or apprehensive. They are hyper-motivated, and people that are happy, complacent, satisfied. You know, you want everybody to vote, but a lot of times they don't.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the issues and what's motivating folks to vote. And listeners, you can get in on this conversation. We're talking about the coming midterm elections and the key issues that are lighting a fire under the voters and what that means for control of Congress and maybe what it means beyond to 2020 in the presidential race. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. I'm talking to Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report. So, Charlie, we talked about the House. The Senate, a different story. Republicans in a much stronger position there. Correct my numbers if they're out of date, but what I have out of 35 seats being contested, 26 are held by Democrats or senators who caucus with the Democrats, while just 9 are held by Republicans. So Republicans in a much better position there.
Right, the House and the Senate, it's like they're being fought in two different Americas. I mean, the path to a potential majority for Democrats in the House is through suburbs, middle class, upper middle class suburbs. In the Senate, it's all about rural states. You know, of the call it 13 most competitive U.S. Senate races, Hillary Clinton carried exactly one of them, Nevada. Mm. Every other one went for Trump. Now, either by, you know, as many as 42 points in the case of West Virginia to, you know, as little as less than a percentage point, like, you know, Michigan or Pennsylvania or Florida, for example. But in the Senate, we could easily see an outcome where Democrats get a majority in the House and just break even or even lose a seat or two in the Senate in the same election night.
Yeah, that's how unusual is that? I mean, I'm sort of appealing to your recall and deep sense of history here. Has that happened in the past?
It's unprecedented. It's unprecedented. Yeah. I mean, this is the most lopsided Senate map in our lifetimes. And I'm 64. And it's a product of 12, you know, in the Senate, you always think in 6-year cycles. 12 years ago, 2006, was President George W. Bush's second term midterm election. The war in Iraq was hugely unpopular. His approval rating, the Gallup poll, was down to 38% going into Election Day. And Republicans had a net loss of 6 U.S. Senate seats that night. 6 years later, the most recent time this class of Senate seats were up, President Obama was beating Mitt Romney by 3 points, a little wider than expected, the most sophisticated presidential campaign operation in American history, and probably the closest thing to a 50-state campaign we'd ever seen. And Democrats picked up another 2 seats on top of the 6 that they had picked up 6 years earlier. So Democrats are just way, way overexposed. And, you know, you've got Democrats representing states that God didn't necessarily intend for there to be Democrats representing them in the Senate. And conversely, Republicans, if it wasn't they've got basically Dean Heller in Nevada, a state that Clinton barely carried, and then a couple open seats in Arizona and Tennessee where Democrats have pretty decent chances. So, this is the most lopsided Senate map in modern history.
Mm. So, as I said, Charlie, in a moment we're going to hear from a couple of political strategists from both parties and talk specifically
very
about
very bright ones, I might add.
Yes, and we're looking forward to introducing them in a moment. But I want to start the sort of question about issues with you. And let me start with the news this week and how that might play out on the campaign trail. President Trump's shifting statements about Russian meddling in the 2016 election, his press conference in Helsinki, as we know, created a firestorm. He walked those comments back. There have already been a bunch of articles about Democrats sensing an opportunity here. Do you think this is a good opportunity for the Democrats?
I personally don't think Brussels and Helsinki is big a game changer as a lot of people, because quite frankly, 1 year ago, the Republican majority in the House looked like it was in real danger, and 6 months ago, and 3 months ago, and 1 month ago. I mean, it's been in danger. Mm. And the thing is, I think you could split the American people up into 3 groups. There are people that are Republican and or conservatives, and they love, like, or are sympathetic with President Trump, and they hate the same people that he hates. and the old proverb, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And their views towards President Trump has hardly changed at all. There will not be many defections among Republicans. On the Democratic side, they hate him, but they've always have hated him. That hasn't changed much. And a large number of the people in the middle, moderates, independents, they're totally disengaged from news. They're totally disengaged from politics. And now I think the president's going to take a little bit of a hit among them in terms of his job approval rating. But since they don't pay much attention and don't vote much, I think it will have less of an effect than a lot of people do think, because there aren't a lot of ambivalent people about President Trump and one way or the other. And the ones that are somewhat ambivalent are kind of checked out of politics.
Mm. I guess where I was going, though, with that question about the news this week is one of the hallmarks of the Trump presidency is these incredible sort of firestorms around particular stories, and they come at us sort
that
of
have
by
made very, very little difference in his approval ratings.
Well, that's sort of the question. So is it so Democrats who might be tempted to sort of jump on the kind of what a mess in Helsinki and, you know, I want to run on that issue. I mean, is it a risk for them or is it better if they sort of stay focused on bread and butter issues around the economy, jobs, healthcare, whatever it is?
Yeah. And let me clarify. The thing is, if President Trump were a stock, you would say he has a narrow trading range. That he's averaged 39% in the Gallup poll. He's never been above 45% in a weekly Gallup. He's never been below 35, and he's usually within 2 points of 39%. Now, are his numbers among the lowest of any modern president at this point? Absolutely. You know, they're better than where they were last fall or at some points earlier this year, but they're still pretty awful and in a place where parties have had horrific midterm elections.
Right. Charlie Hook, I'm going to ask you to just hold that thought because we're coming up against a break, but we'll pick it up right after the break. We're talking with Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report. And after the break, we'll talk to two top, a Republican and a Democratic political strategist. You can join the conversation given the news of the last 2 weeks. Democrats, are you confident your party can retake the House? What about the Senate? Republicans, what does your party need to do to hold on to power? We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
There's a new way to hear Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all your favorite programs. Just ask your smart device to play NPR. Listen to your local station anytime, like this. Hey, smart device, play NPR.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're discussing politics and political strategy in the run-up to the midterm elections. You can join the conversation. Will elections come down to immigration and healthcare, trade and tariffs, or is it simply a referendum on President Trump? Which state election races are you watching this summer? What issues are you passionate about? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook and On Point Radio. We've been talking to Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report. And let's hear a little bit of sound from this week. So earlier this week, as has been widely reported, President Trump created a bit of a political firestorm in Helsinki when he appeared to buddy up to President Putin of Russia. Yesterday, the president told CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor that he agrees with the U.S. intelligence assessment that Russia meddled in the election, the 2016 election, and that he holds Putin responsible, and that he told him as much on Monday in Helsinki.
I let him know we can't have this, we're not going to have it, and that's the way it's going to be.
Now let's listen to tape from this morning. Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez told NPR's Morning Edition that Democrats can use President Trump's inconsistency on Russian interference in the U.S. election in the upcoming midterm elections.
Oh, he twisted himself into a pretzel. Let's be clear. Since 2016, he has never wanted to side with U.S. intelligence agencies. He has continued to tweet. He's continued to raise conspiracy theories about this. This was an act of war. The DNC was one victim, but our bigger victim was democracy.
And let me introduce two political strategists now. Whit Ayers is joining us from Alexandria, Virginia. He's a Republican pollster and strategist, and he's president of North Star Opinion Research. Whit Ayers, it's great to have you on Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Anthony. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And joining us from Washington is Margie Omero, Democratic pollster and strategist at GBA Strategies. She's co-host of the podcast The Pollsters, and you can find a link to the latest episode of The Pollsters at our website, onpointradio.org. Margie, good to hear from you.
Hi, Anthony.
So I'm really interested to talk about a whole bunch of issues, but I wanted to start with this with the news this week. And let me start with you, Margie. We heard Perez there talking about the news this week and how the president has twisted himself into a pretzel. Is this a good issue for Democrats out there on the campaign trail to run on and talk about?
Well, I think it's important for us to highlight how much of an incredible mistake and embarrassment it was, the way the president behaved. It's important for the news to cover it. It is not necessarily top of mind for voters because voters feel exhausted by the news and they want to see a Washington that gets stuff done, that works together, that is fighting for them. And the constant barrage of Trump news doesn't always reassure people. That said, with this specific issue, this specific incident, it really, you know, reveals a Trump weakness that he had always tried to explain as a strength. And a lot of times you would see polls that show people would think Trump is tough. And even if he could be reckless, which is another thing people say describes him well, even his supporters would say that, he at least that recklessness actually can be tough. He's, you know, saying what he thinks and telling it like it is, and, you know, is speaking, you know, tough in a tough way with foreign leaders. And that was not tough. That was the opposite of tough. And does that now, you know, there's no real good way to explain it. I mean, the other thing, too, is that you often hear people say, I think perhaps overuse this phrase, oh, his base likes that. His base wanted him to do it. His base loves it when he does that. When you see Trump in one of his more chaotic, controversial moments, this is not something that the base wanted. You know, the way he spoke with about and to Putin, that's not something that anybody was clamoring for. So I think that does make this incident a bit of a departure from some previous incidents, which were more in line with, you know, his overall behavior that we've seen now for 2 or 3 years. So that's why I think makes it a little bit different. Whether it's a campaign issue that is the number one campaign issue for swing voters, I'm not sure about that.
All right. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of other issues. But Whit Ayers, if you're advising Republicans out there running, how do they walk the line on this particular issue from the news this week?
Anthony, there's no question that what the president said in Helsinki really upset a number of Republican elected officials, particularly in the Senate, really upset a number of Republican foreign policy experts. But I doubt that it's going to have much, if any, effect on Republican support for Donald Trump.
Well, why is that?
We have seen through past controversies, Anthony, whether it's Charlottesville or other blow-ups, that Trump's job approval among Republicans stays locked in right around 80%, and the bulk of that 80% is strongly approved. Mm-hmm. So if you ask a question and you put Donald Trump's name in it, do you approve or disapprove of the way Donald Trump has handled X? You're going to get about 80% of Republicans say they approve, regardless of what X is. And therefore, if past is prologue, and it usually is, the Helsinki blow-up will have no significant effect on Republican support for the president's job.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Listeners, what do you think? We want to hear from you at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. What are the issues that are motivating you to go to the polls, that will motivate you to go to the polls this coming November? Let's take a call. Marcia is calling from Manchester, Maine. Marcia, it's good to have you. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. I just wanted to say that the news conference from Helsinki was the line crosser for me. I'm one of those Democrats that certainly didn't vote for Mr. Trump, but I really believed we could get through it. I believed that he would call to him advisors who would keep his obvious dysfunction under control. And it's not happening. I live in Maine, and this man has managed to insult Canada. It's a place I never thought that we would be. I, of course, will vote, but I will now contribute. I will now get out there and drive people to the polls in order to vote. What he's done by alienating Europe, I mean, where at least a few of us came from, these are our allies. I grew up in a time when anti-communism was a huge thing.
Right.
And to see the President of the United States stand in front of Mr. Putin and say what he did is a big line crosser for me.
Marcia, we appreciate the call, and we hear your passion there. Charlie Cook, I want to come back to you and kick this part of the conversation off. And that is, so I was looking at a recent poll from the Pew Research Center that found that Democrats have the advantage on a lot of issues, including gun policy, foreign policy, immigration, health care. But if this election is about the economy, Republicans have a huge advantage. And arguably, Republicans can argue that overall things are humming along pretty well in terms of the economy. What's your view on that?
Well, historically, midterm elections are not about the economy. The presidential elections tend to turn more on the economy, but not midterms. Hmm. And I guess what I would – and while people lots of pluralities, if not majorities of voters, generally pluralities side more with Democrats than Republicans on a lot of individual issues, but certainly not all of them. But my advice to Democrats is to try to not be so self-indulgent that they should want this election to be a referendum up or down on President Trump, period, end of paragraph. No offense, Democrats, but this election is not about you. And the more you talk about specific issues, the more you're likely to hurt your chances. I mean, when a president's got a job approval rating of, say, 43%, you don't want people to vote on anything other than that. And to the extent that Democrats go off and talk about impeachment or single payer or things like that, I think they're actually getting in the way of what ought to be a winning election year for them. They should keep it focused up or down on President Trump.
Margie O'Meara, yeah, I'd love to hear your view on that. A referendum on President Trump up or down for Democrats.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be so bold as to perhaps disagree with Charlie here. I mean, so first I would say to the initial question, I disagree with the premise that if the election is about the economy, the Republicans have a massive advantage. Because you can see from the way that they're speaking in their communications and the way they've changed tactics that they don't feel that the economy and their singular achievement, the tax plan, is something that they can run on. So they've had to try other things because their one thing that they've been able to accomplish isn't something that people tend to feel has really affected them in any real positive way. And you saw that in the special election in Pennsylvania, and you've seen in a lot of other places. So I don't think that the economy is a strong suit for the Republicans, in addition to all the other disadvantages on issues that you mentioned. And as far as Democrats running on Trump, obviously everybody is challenged in this media and political atmosphere. Everybody has a hard time getting a word in edgewise, right? No matter what it is you're trying to talk about, whether it's political or something else. So because of the way, you know, Trump and his day-to-day chaos really dominates all news. So it's a challenge because you want to respond and address what is happening out of the White House. On the other hand, people feel exhausted. I mean, that's something that we found in our polling. Democrats in particular feel exhausted because It's so like Marcia, it's so worrying and upsetting to hear what's happening that it can exhaust people to follow it closely. And folks want to hear that Democrats have a plan to restore stability and to restore a tone and in Washington and confidence that in our basic institutions, which people are losing right now, you know. And I don't know how we get that back without some sort of message about what we're going to do that's beyond the back and forth of whatever Trump's latest tweet has been.
Yeah, interesting. Whit Ayers, I'd love to get your views on what seems to me could be a Democratic Republican strong suit on the economy. I mean, is that something that you're sensing is being played up out there in a big way?
Republicans would love to talk about concrete accomplishments of the last year and a half. Neil Gorsuch and other conservative judges have been confirmed, and Brett Kavanaugh's on the horizon and likely will be confirmed by November. The largest tax cuts in 31 years, massive deregulation, which is one reason why we have a record stock market. ISIS has been crushed. The Keystone Pipeline has been approved. The U.S. Embassy is going to Jerusalem. And we now have terminally ill patients who can try experimental drugs without having to go to another country. So those are all the things Republican candidates would like to talk about. But of course, as usual, Charlie is exactly right. This is not likely to be about any of those issues. It's likely to be a referendum on Donald Trump. And what that means is that Donald Trump's job approval in the particular House district or the particular state that's involved will be determinant. When the president's job approval is above 50% in any of those districts, The Republican message is simple. I'm for Donald Trump, the Democrats against Donald Trump. The challenge comes in those swing states and swing districts where Donald Trump's job approval is below 50%, in which case the Republican candidate needs all of the Trump supporters plus a chunk of people who do not like Donald Trump. And in those cases, you're going to have a candidate that localizes the race and makes a race about the particular Republican and the particular Democratic candidate, not about the president.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to the phones and take a couple of calls. Zachary is calling from New Orleans. Zachary, you're on the air. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Thank you, Anthony. How are you doing today?
Very well.
Excellent. I'm driving at the fact of it's. I don't understand how Republicans can cling so closely to Trump and his insanity. The uber patriotic gun toting Americans who are the Republicans at 80% approval rates for Trump. How do you hold on so closely to probably the most unpatriotic comments from an American president ever?
Well, Zachary, it's a fair question. We just heard Whit Ayers lay out a pretty solid case why a lot of Republicans would favor Trump. I mean, strong economy. He's making good on his promises on the Supreme Court, making good on other promises, whether it's getting tough on immigration. Whit Ayers, you did a better job than me making that case. But respond to Zachary.
This has become very much a polarized country. That's no surprise to any of your listeners. And so what happens when people say, do you support or oppose what Donald Trump does? The predisposition is to say, he's our guy, and I need to support our guy because all these other people in the media and the Democrats are all going out to get our guy. And so it's very much of a polarized response. As Charlie said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and I am going to support the guy who is the head of my party, almost regardless of what it is.
Let's take a call from Migdad, who's calling from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Migdad, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. Please go ahead.
Hello, Anthony, respected guest. I'm really, my biggest problem, my biggest motive, my biggest driver to the polls, my biggest everything is truly the bigotry and the racism that has been developed throughout, you know, this administration, you know, and I live in Trump country, you know, South Dakota. It's the best place. Everybody I talk to has nothing bad to say about Trump. And it doesn't matter whether you want to say it or not. It's the fact that you need to accept it sometimes. And then no matter what truth comes out, it doesn't faze them. which means that I am actually losing friends because I cannot on a certain, on a simple situation, whether this happened or did not happen. Did he actually do this or did he not do this? Is that really driving people, you know, that doesn't show patriotic if you stick around with this guy, you know, and I happen to be the most patriotic because I am an immigrant, a Muslim, a refugee, and a United States Marine veteran, you know, and I've been here for 18 years and I've been living this and I've seen truly how American is supposed to be. And most importantly, I come from a third world country where this type of administration is truly how it's been for decades. And I know how bad it can hurt everybody around here. And I just cannot get that through anybody. And I was hoping that any of your guests can try to elaborate on that fact and explain to how deeply and troubling this can end up be if we keep going on this type of trend.
Migdad, you brought up a bunch of issues, including people's attitudes towards immigration. And we're going to talk about that after the break. So I thank you for your call. And we're going to get back to that subject when we return. We're talking about politics and political strategy in the run up to the midterm elections. You can join the conversation. Will elections come down to immigration and health care, trade and tariffs? What do you think? We'll be right back after this break. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour. In our latest episode, we're exploring the causes and consequences of hatred, what makes it such a powerful force, and why some people feel its pull more deeply. Take a listen to the TED Radio Hour on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about political strategies of Republicans and Democrats as the midterm elections get closer. My guest today, Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report, Democratic pollster and strategist Margie O'Meara, and Republican pollster and strategist Whit Ayers. Charlie Cook, I want to pick up with a question that Migdad from South Dakota put on the table. He talked about a lot of things there, but in particular, attitudes toward immigration. And you know, I was struck yesterday there was news Republicans in the House approved a symbolic resolution expressing support for ICE, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And this was in response to some Democrats who want to defund and abolish ICE. My question is, what does the polling say about how important this issue is to Americans?
I think that, you know, immigration is obviously an issue that a lot of people feel very, very strongly about, and there are people on both sides. But there have been very few minds changed on immigration in the last year or two. I mean, that the battle lines got formed a long time ago, and the people on one side are pretty much going with Democrats and people on the other going with Republicans, and there's just not a lot of malleable voters on it. I think Democrats, you know, it's not bad for them to talk about immigration so much, but if I were a Democrat in a swing state or congressional district, the initials ICE would never come across my lips, because I think that's starting getting into dangerous territory where people see that as something of a national security issue. But to something else that Migdad said was that it's not socially acceptable for Republicans and people in red areas to say something bad about President Trump. I would argue that probably two-thirds of Republican voters, and much higher than that of Republican, say, members of Congress, privately have some real misgivings over things the president has said and done. But the penalty for saying something publicly critical of the president is extremely high, as Senator Bob Corker and Jeff Flake have learned, so that a lot of them are kind of keeping their powder dry. They're muting their criticism of him because there just isn't much tolerance in the Republican Party for critical words about him. So they're staying pretty quiet about it. But when you talk privately to Republican members of Congress, a lot of them are very, very aware of President Trump's shortcomings, and they are troubled by them. They just don't feel like they could talk about them and win a Republican primary anytime soon.
Yeah. what airs, this sort of compels me to come to you in terms of what does that mean in terms of what you advise Republican candidates out there on the campaign trail?
It's very clear that if a Republican goes out and publicly articulates disagreements with the president, that number one, nothing will change, and number two, that Republican will destroy their own base of political support. And so I agree with Charlie. That's why so few Republicans have said anything publicly, even though they may harbor private disappointments and disagreements with the president. There's just no political mileage. If they go out and they criticize the president, they're going to get the Republicans not to support them, and Democrats aren't going to come over and support them just because they've criticized the president. Democrats are going to vote for the Democratic candidate.
Right.
So it's committing political suicide at this point.
So let's take another call. John is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. John, you're on the air. Great to have you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Anthony. I would like to say that my problem is that the Republicans' game is too strong. The Democrats are going to lose. And the Republicans' game is so vicious and so heartless that the Democrats have got to stop bringing up points that are shooting themselves in the face. I agree with the gentleman. Everything he's saying, Democrats, if you're listening, the gentleman is correct. Don't bring up ICE. Don't bring up anything that would cause Trump's voters to be motivated. And that's what the Democrats constantly do year after year after year. They are too soft. They're wusses. They're wimps. And I'm a Democrat, but I hate my party's spinelessness. And they always pick the wrong topics. Their theme should be people and planet. People and planet. Protect the people and protect the planet. But what are they doing? They're giving the Republicans all the ammunition that they need to destroy them like they did with Trump. And it's time for the Democrats to stop being the spineless politicians and the spineless running around crying about everything.
John, we got it. We got it, John. And I want to give Margie O'Meara a chance to respond to you. Margie, there's John saying, come on, Democrats, grow a spine. What do you say?
I appreciate the sentiment where Trump's language is so vicious. I mean, it also echoes a bit of what Migdad said. This language that is so vicious, that seemed so beyond what was possible in this modern time, is now a daily occurrence. And it would never even occur to folks on the left to say or consider saying some of the things about our opponents that, you know, Trump says on even a slow day. So I appreciate that it feels like somebody, you know, people are playing by a different set of rules. I get it.
But isn't John also saying that Democrats aren't focusing on issues that can really win for them? And he's talking about taking care of families and the planet, as opposed to giving, putting out issues around national security or the border or whatever that really inflamed Trump supporters.
I would say a few things. I mean, first of all, I think there are plenty of Democrats out there who are talking about fighting for families, and certainly Democrats talk about protecting the planet and the environment. I think, you know, it really depends on the district and the candidate and what are the needs and interests of that district, whether the candidates are still in a primary or whether they've moved to a general. It varies tremendously. You don't hear all candidates speaking with the same voice or using the same language. It really is, you know, the goal is to find something that's unique to you and is also, you know, reminds people or places you for voters where you are in the spectrum. Are you sort of in the middle? Are you more, you know, lean more toward the left, et cetera? So, but you want something that's true to you. I think a challenge that a lot of Republicans have, is that you have a lot of Republicans who perhaps privately have incredibly strong misgivings about this president, yet don't voice them for a variety of reasons that we can discuss. And that makes them seem inauthentic, because they have to really twist themselves in the knots to, you know, defend or reinforce something that the president said that they know is not true. They know that, you know, the president didn't just misspeak in Helsinki. It was just a double negative. They know that, but are forced to say things that they would not otherwise say in another situation. So I think that makes a lot of Republicans seem inauthentic. On the issue, I do want to talk about a little bit about this issue of race and immigration. The conventional wisdom is that it's a more of a driving issue for Republicans than it is for Democrats. That may change given what we've seen now at the border and how we have polling coming out on this today, how cruel and inhumane people have thought Trump's policy of family separation, ripping children and toddlers and babies and diapers away from their parents. And putting them into prisons and cages. That's like a grotesque. It's so grotesque, and it struck voters immediately as grotesque. And it is an extension of what we have known about Trump and about his position on race and immigration and how he views other countries. We had other polling that showed when he used inflammatory language about a variety of countries. That was one of the most egregious things that Trump had done, even months later, more so than, you know, spends too much time golfing or et cetera, because that really struck people as cruel and you know, not becoming of a leader. And one of the biggest, you know, tragedies of this Trump era, in my view, is how it has revealed the racial tensions that I think people perhaps wrongly thought were part of the past. Now, that's not everybody. That's not all Trump voters. And there's been a lot of study on that. But it is, you know, it is a factor. It is part of what Trump says himself. And it is part of some of the enthusiasm for Trump, not all Trump support.
Got it. Marjane, because you brought up immigration, I want to play some tape from Elizabeth Warren, who has been out campaigning for Democrats around the country. She's often talked about as a potential presidential candidate in 2020. The Massachusetts senator went on MSNBC to talk about the Trump administration's family separation policy. So here she is reacting to news that the White House was struggling to reunite many of these families.
The Trump administration is so incompetent and failed to keep good enough records when families were torn apart that they can't figure out how to bring them back together. The Trump administration has to be held accountable for what they have done to human beings on the border in the name of the United States of America.
So Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, speaking there. Let's go back to the phones. Carolyn is calling from Aiken, South Carolina. Carolyn, you're on the air, and it's good to have you. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Anthony. Yes, I am from Aiken, South Carolina, a very conservative state. I am a very conservative Republican. To the lady, I think her name was Margie, I can't remember.
Margie O'Meara, yes.
Okay, thank you. To her comments about us being sick and tired of the media and the liberal left going on and on about President Trump, yes, we are. I am so tired of hearing all of this. I just don't even watch those channels at all anymore. And I don't really watch Fox that much anymore. I watch it a little bit, but not that much. I listen to NPR a lot.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Carolyn.
and to the gentleman that's on, I don't like everything that Trump says, but I do like what he has done and what that gentleman listed, all those issues, the economy, et cetera, that's what I like, and that's what I'm voting on.
All right,
and
Carolyn. So, yeah, Carolyn, I think you made your point. I'm really glad that you called. The gentleman, of course, you're referring to is Whit Ayers. And Charlie Cook, what do you hear from Carolyn there in South Carolina? I mean, she seems to be expressed nicely what Whit Ayers was talking about, that there's a pretty solid record there for many Republicans to run on.
Well, I think I agree with both of them in the sense that there are things that Republican members of Congress want to be talking about,
right,
and would like to be talking about, but instead they're constantly being asked to react to things the president, where the president gets in the way of them getting their message across. And, you know, that's just an enormous challenge that Republicans have to face. But, you know, I'm personally troubled by what I've seen in terms of immigration and the children to the previous question. But the thing about it is what's happened is it's offended people who are already offended. And when people who are already offended are offended, it doesn't really change things. and it doesn't move people off the middle. And so I that's why I think that it as outraged as a lot of people are, it really hasn't changed the balance much in this campaign. Because the swing voters are hardly even paying attention to this stuff. So this is going to be about getting bases out. And the Democratic bases, they're very motivated. And the Republican base is fairly lethargic. And if Republicans lose their majority in the House, as I strongly suspect they will, I think it's not going to be because of a lot of Republicans defecting and voting for Democrats. I think it's going to be their disillusion. And they just simply don't show up while Democrats are motivated.
Interesting. Let's go to Maureen, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Maureen, good to have you on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks, Anthony. Yes, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I think, you know, thanks to our Russian friends, we know that the Democrats went with a status quo candidate over the candidate that really excited the party. And, you know, they keep returning Nancy Pelosi to power, no matter how many times it gets spanked. And I think they're not inspiring anybody right now. At least the Republicans have shook up leadership. And we see by Trump ascending to the White House that Republican voters are willing to try anything to shake things up. And Democrats need to follow suit. They need to listen to what their constituents are telling them.
So shaking up leadership. Margie O'Meara, of course, some Democratic candidates out there are talking about shaking up leadership in their own party, not supporting Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Is that a winning issue, do you think, in the coming election? Or how do you advise?
Well, it will depend on the district and on the candidate, for sure. For some places, it may be necessary, but it's not sufficient. It is not, you know, voters want to hear more than simply, you know, leadership issues. And I would also add another thing, which is it's not just about who is the leader. It's also about the diversity of the candidates and of the voter base on the left, which is so incredibly enthusiastic and diverse and robust in all kinds of ways. Record number of women candidates running for office all over the country. Young people running for office, minority candidates, African-American candidates, Muslim candidates. I mean, an incredible wealth and breadth and depth of the field. You have candidates where you have districts that were difficult districts that it would be hard in a different year to get one strong Democrat to run, and you had three, four, or five viable candidates running in some districts. So, so there's a real enthusiasm with the candidates that reflects the diversity of our field. On the right, I'm troubled by how imbalanced it is along gender and racial lines, where women Republican candidates have a hard time emerging from their primaries. They don't seem as likely to get recruited or supported from the Republican establishment.
So, Margie, I'm going to have to jump in because we are up against the clock. But, of course, we're going to see how all of this plays out in just a few months. Margie O'Meara, Democratic pollster and strategist at GBA Strategies. Whit Ayers, Republican pollster and strategist, president of North Star Opinion Research. Thank you both for joining us today. We're really grateful.
Pleasure to be with you, Anthony.
And big thanks to Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report. Charlie, always delighted to hear your wisdom on these matters. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.